This is the Holy Fool tuning in to you. We hope you'll find expanse of mind. Yeah, Holy Fool, with a brand new show breaking through. Now let's go.
Okay, we are back again. Nice to see you again, Jasper.
Great to see you, Brother David, man. You're looking good there in Chiang Mai. How's it going there?
It's going okay. It's going. The weather's really beautiful here. Looks like you've got a little bit of cool weather there.
Yeah, man. It's like outside the tent, it's blowing up a storm, and it's rain, and you might hear a bit of thunder in the background and the tent shaking around a bit. But it's incredible, incredible being here in all the elements and in all the glory of nature.
Fantastic. And so that kind of seems to point us in the direction of what we're going to talk about.
Yeah, man, definitely. Yeah, taking a deep dive into this elemental moment. Because last week we were unpacking the Garden of Eden, the Garden of Ether. Mm-hmm. You know, this that the ancients were speaking metaphorically, mythically. They weren't speaking about some historical point from which everything progresses. They were speaking about a possibility for us all right now. So I was thinking, well, you know, I think we got the ball rolling nicely last week, but both of us and our listeners too might be thinking, well, okay, so you know what, that sounds pretty good, it makes sense, but how do I actually live in the Garden of Eden? How do I actually inhabit the Garden of Ether? Is that, you know, what do I do? What sort of conditions do I have to fulfill to be able to inhabit the Garden of Ether, if that's even possible?
Mm-hmm. And the Garden of Ether, the garden of that fifth element, the more rarefied state of being, to me, when I hear it, it means to be safe, to be comfortable, to be alive, to be... not in a turmoil in my mind, that kind of a place.
Yeah, definitely. Well, you know, because this Garden of Ether is just, you know, it's a really, really incredible place because, you know, the physicist Nassim Harriman.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, he talks about, and I mean, I don't know if this is backed up by mainstream quantum physics, but he claims that in one cubic centimeter of space, there is more potential energy than in all of the matter of the whole universe. And I mean, you're the rocket scientist. I mean, what's your take?
I don't know about those numbers, but I do. You know, very often these super mainstream physicists will talk about the amount of energy and density of stuff that's out there. It's like there's no energy shortage. There's just, yeah, space itself is packed with energy, something like
that's
that.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Just packed beyond belief.
And Tesla, of course, was, you know, he was one of those amazing minds, like a sort of a combined mystic and scientist, who was endeavoring to tap the ether, this limitless source of energy. So, yeah, as you say, somehow when we're living in ether, living in the Garden of Ether, it's kind of like we're completely safe because there's no lack. There is absolutely no lack at all. And somehow the cells of our body, it's like the mammalian brain, and even deeper than that, the reptilian brain is, you know, it's not sort of worried. It's no longer in survival mode because it seems that it's been informed that it's in a place of complete abundance.
Right. Which is, and I think this survival mode has been being driven into us from this Sharona stuff and the jabs and the bands and the masks and all of this stuff. I think there is a real level of pushing us down to this survival sort of worry and pushing us out of the garden, it seems.
Absolutely. Well, I would say, you know, just to respond to that before we move back into the solutions, mm-hmm. It would seem that the situation that we're in right now is a real kind of Cain kind of situation. you know, because something that I didn't, I felt that I didn't unpack enough in the last show was that, so, you know, if we're talking about Adam and Eve, Adam being Atman, which is the soul, and Eve being the sleeve, you know, of Atman, the clothing of Atman, which is the body, then Cain and Abel are not their physical sons, because in a way it's just one person. You know, it's every one of us, all of the Atmans around, all of our listeners, whether you're a man or a woman, you know, it's the body and the soul. So Cain and Abel mythically don't really represent children, physical people. They represent outcomes. And I think that the outcomes represented are not within the Garden of Eden. They're not with it. They're represented after the fall has already taken place. So, right. you know what I mean? When we're already kind of, we've forgotten the oneness of right now. So, you know, in the illusory world of separation, there's a side of us which is still really good, which is actually most people. That's the able side, you know, really still ultimately trying to do its best. But there's another side, which is the kind of the bad side, the bad guy side. And that Garden of Eden story, the ancients are telling us, look, when we're not in the Garden of Eden, the bad guy's always going to win, you know? Seriously, he's always going to win. He's always going to murder the good guy. You know, right. Bummer, right? You know, it's that's it, man. That's it, you know? Unless we are right here, right now, in the five senses, in the absolutely present, Atman incarnated in Eve, Adam and Eve together, body and soul and body, you know, then the Cain is always going to exploit and ultimately control and kill Abel. So that's what we're seeing right now, you know, maybe more than any other time. Well, I mean, I don't know, you know, maybe the same as with Hitler and Mussolini and Stalin and many times in the past. But it seems to be happening. I don't know if it's ever happened like in a real global way. You know, particularly in democracies like in, you know, in Britain and America, which in the past we always thought were really reasonable places, you know, Anglo-Saxon kind of grounded, rational places that wouldn't fall to silly ideas like fascism and communism, you know, and it's happening there too. So, yeah, it's a complete Cain takeover.
Right. So, the solution.
Okay, yeah, so, you know, right. So the solution of being in the Garden of Ether, the Garden of Eden, is taking the deepest possible dive that we can right now into our five senses. Really is, you know. And I know we talked a lot about innocence, what I call innocence, you know, inner sense, which is all of the senses experienced together as one sense of sense. But... Mm-hmm. You know, often I have spoken about and also I have been living in myself more the sense of touch, sight and sound. And I realize, you know, since I've been taking this deeper dive into feeling within myself, how can I live, you know, in the potential of the Garden of Ether, Garden of Eden? It's I have to really bring in more the senses of taste and smell, because if we start to look at the sense organs which are associated with the elements, we can see that the densest elements, which are water and earth, water is the sense of taste and earth is the sense of smell. Okay, so, and these are really the densest of all the elements. Ether is actually associated with sound. Air is associated with touch. And fire is associated with sight. So that, you know, and this is great, you know, these are really essential senses, but in a way they're more kind of airy, you know. Even ether, this the most primary element, I mean, there's nothing to it. It's not very grounded, you know. It's all potential, you know, in a way. And so in order to bring its potential into our human lives, you know, we need to have a sort of a holistic embodiment in all of the senses, in all of the sense organs, you know. And I think it's very interesting that with Sharona, a lot of people are losing their senses of taste and smell, right? And I think metaphorically, maybe that's telling us something, you know, that we're on the media all the time and, you know, in our heads, in our emotions, and not really, you know, we're in the more ethereal kind of elements. We're not really grounded. We're not really earthed. And so maybe we have to be careful, because we might actually, some people are permanently losing the senses of the denser elements.
Right. And so the complete embodiment in this feminine side of reality can't really take place if we're ignoring and what would I say? not connected to, not paying attention to, not really aware of our taste and our smell fully, like the wild animals would be. I mean, they certainly are fully engaged in that.
Yeah, they are. And, you know, I think, you know, that because taste and smell, we only associate them with eating or smelling like a really smelly thing. We're often not engaged in those. But since I've been aware of this, you know, like, I mean, part of it was like, was sort of coming up with something to, you know, to talk about on this show, you know, and I knew I wanted to unpack what we were talking about last week. But, you know, I really love my Eve. You know, I really love my body, my unconscious, because, you know, whenever I'm like the Atman side is like, well, how can I incarnate more? Like every time, pretty much, you know, and maybe it's because I live in nature and I have access to this ability, which I think that we all have, this sensibility. But immediately there was just this sort of like revealing to me, just be like an animal, you know. It's like when you're walking around, it's like you look at dogs and cats, you know, and they're sniffing everything, aren't they, you know?
Right.
And they're, you know what I mean? And they're sort of like, and the snake has got its tongue out and it's sort of tasting the environment. And before the show, it's still morning here in Corfu. And before this, you know, I just in a little window between rain, I went down to the sea and it was super, super wild. And, you know, swimming in the crazy sea, the thunder's just going outside. And, you know, and I was just really more than normal, just aware of the smell of the ocean. And I was in there and just getting buffeted around and tasting the salt. And, you know, there was something in my Eve body that was like, it was just more alive. I just felt more chi, more presence, more permeation of, you know, of nowness, you know, and just more joy in my sort of Eve body, was in my unconscious, more like this internal, yes, motherfucker, this is it, you know, don't go away, come back to this.
Right. Don't go away from that. Come back to this. Right.
Yeah.
Well said.
Yeah.
Well said. And I think the paltriness of my go-to solution when the stress level is going to the mind, going to figure out, calculate, get more data. And they don't feel like real solutions somehow. They feel, even at the best, they feel flimsy. They feel like, yeah, well, something about it. But the way you just described this moment, it didn't feel flimsy at all. It felt very solid and real.
Yeah, definitely. It really does. And it's interesting, the example that you gave, because, you know, the thinking mind really does want to help. And it is a part of, you know, the communities of our intelligence. Of course, it's completely allowed, you know, it's completely necessary that we research certain things, you know, mm-hmm. But really we're supposed to be doing that from this holistic perspective where everything else is also taken care of. And mm-hmm. So I think what's happening is that we're losing the physical sense of taste and smell. And when we're, you know, researching on the internet about what might happen, You know, we're getting some sweet thoughts are coming. Oh my God, you know, there's this feeling, this emotion inside of us is, oh, that's a feeling of hope. And it's kind of, it tastes, if we were to unpack it, it would have a sweet taste or a sweet smell. And then there's, oh shit, you know, what if I have to leave this place because I might have to get the, you know what, you know, and that's a bitter, that's a really sour one, you know. And so I think we're still, you know, the in a way, we're still partaking of these same senses, but we're doing it in a much less, we're doing it in a disembodied way, a mental kind of emotional way.
And it, right, and it disembodied it way. Right.
It doesn't serve us. It really doesn't serve us at all.
Fantastic. So what do you think? You think just really one aspect of this would be to just consciously put our attention on our taste and on our smell and noticing that and being in nature and feeling the taste of it, and we could actually drive ourselves more completely into Eve that way?
Yeah, I do. But remember, it's not, you know, when we approach something like this, you know, the conscious thinking mind, you know, its function is to compartmentalize things. And so it might start saying, right, I'm really going to start smelling everything out now. And in a way, it starts putting the other senses on the back burner. So, you know, as best we can, we have to see if we're able to include the senses of smell and taste within the whole sensory experience. And initially, it's, you know, it's going to be challenging because it's not something that we're used to doing. Mm-hmm. But as best we can, I think it's important to try to make it like a real open kind of holistic thing. You know, it really is about just relaxing. Ultimately, it's about just being, you know, completely and totally relaxed, but in that relaxed state, being completely present, being completely conscious. This is it. You know, this is what really being in the Garden of Ether, for me, the Garden mm-hmm. of Eden is all. Because again, as we were saying last week, you know, it's like Brahman, God, has kind of created the Garden of Eden for its, in a way, its personalized aspect for Atman, for the countless Atmans that come out of it to experience. And the best case scenario that it's laid on for itself is that, you know, this is paradise, man. It's like, you know, everything is here. I've got everything that I could possibly need. But somehow, you know, when we persist in eating of the fruit of the knowledge of good and evil, which is basically relying too much upon the thinking mind at the expense of our holistic intelligence, you know, we get kicked out, we get booted out, we boot ourselves out. It's not that, you know, because we are God, you know, so it's like we deny ourselves access to the miracle which is available to us. So again, you know, the way that we kind of hack that, the way that we come back to that is to acknowledge the sense organs, which are literally the doors. I mean, William Blake, you know, what did he say? You know, the band The Doors got their name from that. William
The Doors
Blake
of Perception.
Play. When the doors of perception are cleansed, then all things shall appear as they are, infinite. And what are the doors of perception? It's just obvious. They're the sense organs, right? Mm-hmm. You know? So when the sense organs are cleansed, you know, and we're no longer kind of like, you know, we don't have the scales of judgment like it talks about in the Bible, you know, scales over the eyes. Well, the scales are like weighing scales. You know, they're not like scales on a reptile, you know, they're weighing scales, which are on the eyes, which is, or on the ears or whatever, which is kind of hearing things and seeing things and feeling things. And there's always like a judgment that comes with whatever is being perceived. So mm-hmm. we take the scales away, you know, and the doors of perception are cleansed and all things appear to us as they actually are, which is infinite, you know.
There you go. Cool. All right, you had on this, you wanted me to remind you to speak a little bit about faith.
Yeah, faith is a really cool idea, you know, because really everything, all words are concepts, you know, which hopefully point towards something deeper. So faith is often interpreted as sort of like a rather disembodied idea, as like me, the separate me, who has faith in, you know, some creator God, you know, who's kind of created me as a separate being. I mean, I'm sure not everybody thinks like that, but, you know, that's, I think that's a common kind of idea.
Yeah, sure.
So faith for me is much smarter than that. You know, it's much more experiential than that. It's this inner knowing that when I, to the extent that I can, again, really, you know, cleanse the doors of my perception, you know, take the scales of judgment away, you know, really start to, wherever I am, to, it's almost like I'm tasting my environment. It's almost, I'm, you know, I'm smelling it. Certainly when I'm eating my breakfast or my lunch or whatever, I'm present with it. I'm not thinking about other things. So the taste is kind of peripheral. I'm really there with that taste and with the smell of the coffee. I'm really, bang, I'm really here. And so the biofeedback that I get from doing this, from being really in my senses, again, particularly the denser senses like taste and smell, is a really good one. It's like, again, it's like Eve is, the body is kind of saying, this is it, motherfucker, stay here. You know, I feel, you know, I start to feel good. It's like, okay, well, when you really notice that, and you're not like halfway around the world thinking about what might happen, you know, you start to notice, wow, cool. With the simple inner act of just allowing myself to chill and to consciously, you know, allow what's happening now to be witnessed and just to perceive it myself, somehow there's some intelligence that sort of says, yeah, I like this, you know, and you notice a kind of relaxation in the body and a smile maybe comes, you know. So this is faith, you know, it's faith. Wow, that when I do this, I feel good, you know. And so, you know, I don't know what's going to happen next moment. So it might seem a little kind of insubstantial to the thinking mind, which always wants to know what's going to happen in the next moment. But remember, when we go to the thinking mind, the rest of the intelligence, it doesn't really hit the spot, you know. As you said earlier on, it doesn't really work, you know. We're doing this research, but there's still this anxiety that you can't shift.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Exactly. Yeah. I mean, that when you were describing that feeling of the faith, you know, it had the feeling of safety. And it had the feeling of like my center of gravity lowering to the point where it is grounded in something firm, which was very different than when it was flitting up here in the dangerous sort of what should I do next in all these scenario worlds. That's, yeah, that's anxious. And I think when the focus goes up here, the whole body is kind of saying, whoa, what's going on? It's getting feedback like, wow, we must be in some sort of really crazy zone. And when we just come back here, it's like, oh, it's good. And it's, and it's solid. So those things that were causing the worry, okay, they still may be there. Like you said, we don't know what's going to happen next, but they appear more like they really are phantoms as opposed to realities, which is what I'm expressing, which is what I'm feeling when I'm in my senses. That's as real as it's going to get. The other things are more fantasies, but this is tangible. It's really happening now.
Well said. Yeah. It's true. It's really true. And anything more than that, again, we're starting to kind of gorge on the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, you know, which again is kind of rational thinking. This is good, this is bad. You know, if I get the, you know what, it's going to be bad or it's going to be good because I can do this or I can't do that. You know, that's what it is. We're back. We've fallen. You know, we're out of the Garden of Eden. You know, we're out of it again. And, you know, as the Genesis tells us, you know, when we're out of it, Cain is going to come along. He's going to find us, man. He's going to find us, that motherfucker, you know, and he's going to get us, you know. So we have to retreat, you know, we have to kind of come back again into the Garden of Eden where, you know, there's only one again, really. I know it's like Adam and Eve, but really Adam and Eve are two sides of the same coin. It's me right now. It's you. It's you, listener. You know, it's this, the two sides of the same us right now, the soul and the body. You know, mm-hmm. we don't need to know about those separate outcomes in a way, because, you know, yeah, just right now, it's good. It's always good. It's always good right now.
Fantastic. Fantastic. You used a phrase before we went on. We were talking together for a moment. You said, all I have to do is invest in this moment.
Yeah.
And that really struck me. I think it's a good guidepost for me. Yeah. And investing in the moment was coming back to the senses that are happening right now, coming back to our senses, especially the taste and the smell, because they're not very abstract.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
It has a very different feeling for me, yeah, than visual things or listening or hearing. Even the skin is getting a little bit more tangible, but the something about the smell and the taste. There's something very connected to safety for me.
Mm.
I mean, something. Yeah, maybe our mammalian history when we were, you know, scurrying around as mammals in the dark on the ground, sniffing. We knew when we were in danger. We knew when we were safe by the smell.
Mm-hmm. It's true. It's true. So, yeah, let's maybe just start to wrap it up by just suggesting that both of us and our listeners too, just as, you know, something which is fun, hopefully, you know, that for the rest of the week, it's like the fun kind of play that we come back to, is that we you know, it's starting with just like imagining with our minds that wherever we are, it's kind of like we're tasting our environment. What does it taste like, you know? Not the imagined, like we're not getting too much into it, but just what we see and what we hear and what we feel, you know. It's like we're adding this sense of taste, well, you know, and the sense of smell as well. So whether we can actually tangibly taste or smell something, we're allowing those senses to enter into this conscious experiential nowness.
Mm. Yes. Allowing them in, right? Allowing all of that in. And who knows what kind of information streams we've been neglecting. Because that's a lot of information. That's a lot of stuff. That's a lot of connection to reality.
I feel so. I think, you know, like, you know, in the Bible it said man cannot live on bread alone. And, you know, I think that was a... I've always kind of felt that you know, that there are literally, you know, in the colors that we see, there is nutrition, you know, in the sounds that we hear, there is nutrition. But I think ultimately, again, it's like, it's only the conscious thinking mind which takes, you know, those senses out of context. Really, it's one ocean of sense. Everything's meant to be taken together, invested in together as one sense of sense, inner sense. And when we can do that, who knows, maybe we need to eat less, and, you know, maybe we're just able to get more prana from our food. Maybe we start to heal chronic conditions. You know, maybe we start to feel that more abundance, more money is coming into our lives, more love, all kinds of things, simply by just allowing the mechanism to work as it's supposed to work, rather than rationing ourselves simply by not taking notice.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Well said. Great chatting with you, Jasper.
You too, brother. You too, man. You have a great week, bro, and have a great week, listeners.
This is goodbye from the Holy Fool. Hope you enjoyed the latest show. Christ, ooh, yay. Holy fool. Feel your body, relax your eyes, find your natural state of mind. You know, conscious is cool, waking up with a holy fool. You know, conscious is cool, waking up with a